Mr. Chairman. It looks like he's thinking about it. There it goes. Now you're recording.
Awesome.
Sorry.
All right. Welcome everybody to our May edition of ITAC. We'll go ahead and Chuck, would you please do a roll call?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. And I apologize if I go in a different order than normal. We created a new attendance log I'm going off of. We'll start out with Representative Nguyen. Jagadishan Krishnamurthy.
Present.
Brian Kirkland.
I'm here.
Eddie Cook.
Here.
Lev Gonick.
Here.
Stuart Bruner for David Byers.
Present.
J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Rebecca Pereira for Richard Stavnik.
Here.
And Ryan Murray.
I am here.
Mr. Chairman, you have a quorum of 6 voting members and 2 advisory. You are set to go.
All right, thank you. Again, welcome everybody. I want to go ahead and remind folks that this is a public meeting and we do follow public meeting law for Arizona. In the agenda, there is a link. If you have any comments, there is a public comment submission form. You can go ahead and submit your comments through that form and the team will review and disposition those comments. I also want to officially ask the members, actually I'll ask staff first, did we receive any conflict of interest forms from any of the members?
Mr. Chairman, we did not.
Okay, and I will go ahead and ask the members. Is there anyone that needs to raise their hand regarding a conflict of interest at this time? Mr. Murray.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I will be recusing myself from the project that Homeland Security is putting forth as part of my vote.
All right, thank you, Mr. Murray. And staff, let's go ahead and we'll follow up with Mr. Murray following the meeting to have the proper form filled out and added to our record as official record of the agenda. All right, with that, I'm sorry, go ahead, Chuck, did you have something?
No, I was just acknowledging, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, we'll go ahead and step into our first item, which is approval of the April 19th recording as the minutes of our last meeting.
Mr. Chair Rossetti, I move to approve the minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. Do we have a second?
This is Jaggi. I'll second.
Thank you, Jaggi. Mr. Bruner.
Mr. Chairman, as you can probably already guess, I'm going to have to not vote on the minutes because I did not actually listen to the recording. So
I understand. I will give you an opportunity to abstain.
Thank you.
Okay. I think we should give him a homework assignment to listen to the minutes.
Not a good week for that.
only if he's having trouble sleeping. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And wait for it, Stuart. Any abstentions?
Yes, I'll be abstaining, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Right. Noted. Thank you. But we still have a majority to carry that forward. All right. We will step into then our next item on the agenda, which is Department of Homeland Security bringing forward a project. And as noted, Mr. Murray will be recusing himself from this vote.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Homeland Security who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of their project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Homeland Security is requesting approval to procure and implement an enterprise license for security software. This software will integrate security into the development process and scan software code into development, production, and post-production to detect and reduce security risks for the state agencies that wish to utilize it. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions that you may have.
Thanks, Bob. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee.
We're excited to share with you our project today, which is the Enterprise Application Security Service with Veracode. My name is Nan Pham. I'm the statewide cybersecurity program manager with the Department of Homeland Security. Today with me are members of the Veracode team who will introduce themselves.
Hi, Nan. Thank you. My name is Matthew McIsaac. I am the manager of customer success here at Veracode for the public sector in the United States. I know Max is having internet issues right now, but he is the senior solutions architect covering the West Coast for Veracode as well. Oh, Max, are you here?
Yes, I'm back on. There we go. My Wi-Fi has been a little spotty today. Hi, everyone. My name is Max Hupt. I'm the solutions architect, which is a fancy title for sales engineers. So any technical questions about the product, I am your person. And it's great to be able to have the opportunity to present to you all. Thank you.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Jeff Houston. I'm the account executive here at Veracode and work with many states. And Arizona is one of the states that that I do cover on the public sector team. Thank you for your time today.
Good afternoon, folks. My name is James Salerno. I am a senior customer success manager working with the public sector here at Veracode, and I do have my PMP certification and will be working with the team to roll out and implement if this solution is chosen.
Thank you, everyone. Next slide. So our business issue right now is the Budget Bill 2862 mandates our agency to implement an enterprise license for security software used by the state agencies, integrate security into the development process, scan software code in development, production, and post-production, and detect and improve security threats by using at least two of the following: static analysis, dynamic testing, pen testing, and software composition analysis. The state currently lacks visibility and effective mitigation of security flaws in applications developed by its agencies and departments, which increases the risk of data breaches and cyber incidents. Application vulnerability assessments are periodically being conducted independently by agencies, but are not coordinated, which means that we can miss some coding flaws. And there is currently no enterprise solution for application security. Next slide. So the benefit for the state agencies and constituents, Veracode specifically, identification of application security risks across all the state agencies, single reporting platform to understand coding deficiencies and web application entry points, developer integration to ensure vulnerabilities are identified prior to the production release, ability to decrease the security debt in a timely manner, developer training on security coding best practices. This solution also adheres to the cloud first policy, and this solution provides agencies with the means to comply to statewide policy, system security acquisition and development. Next slide. And our proposed solution, Veracode will present on this slide.
Thanks, Dan. Hi, everyone. So for our proposed solution, we've been closely aligned to making sure that we fit not just all the items of Budget Bill 2862, but also be able to be there as a partner and to hold Arizona's hands throughout the deployment and remediation of these vulnerabilities. We do this with a SaaS-based application security platform that is follows along that cloud-first alignment. And since we are a 100% SaaS-based solution that is offered both within a FedRAMP, StateRAMP instance, but also a commercial instance as well. We can provide this through this analysis through code analysis, static analysis, dynamic analysis, manual penetration testing, software composition analysis, and also other types of integrations for web apps, mobile apps, and API analysis as well. We take this further with our developer training to make sure that once these vulnerabilities are found, we are also being able to educate developers and also security personnel to help fix these vulnerabilities through our e-learning videos, which are a very nice way of roll out essentially a standard of, hey, here's how vulnerabilities are presented, here's how to fix them. And then we also make them much more hands-on with our security labs, which is a hands-on service that essentially starts by creating a website with vulnerabilities that are active and then shows people how to take advantage of those vulnerabilities and then how to fix them within those same examples. Then lastly, we're able to integrate these into throughout several different developer work streams, much more than just normal what you would expect through like a Microsoft suite, but also all throughout several different integrations within the software development lifecycle. Next up here is Matt McIsaac to talk more about what we can do from security consultants and customer success.
Thanks, Max. So with Varicode as well, with the proposed solution, you don't just get my team. So James, who does, as he mentioned, have his PMP certification. We also have additional resources that are a little bit more behind the scenes, but you still have full access to. Each account and agency would have access to a customer success engineer. That individual's sole purpose is to be a post-sale version of Max. They will be the technical responsibility from the Varicode side, assist with any integration questions, ensure that your CI/CD and IDE integrations are working correctly with the Varicode solution, and ensuring you are getting the most out of what we have to offer. With that as well, we also have a team of application security consultants. These are developers that are trained in security that are Varicode employees. They can help you with any packaging questions, as well as remediation and secure coding best practices guidance. There is no limitation to how many times you can use either of those services here at Varicode, as it is all included in the total contract value. Lastly, we have a single platform to ensure continuity. What this means is that each agency will log into the Varicode platform and look like they have their own instance, but for reporting purposes, up to Homeland Security for anything that they need cross-functionally to make sure that compliance is being met within each agency, we have the ability to pull it. We can pull it through the platform. We can send it to your reporting needs that you use internally within Arizona. Everything will be there within a single platform. So one point, you don't need to go to different areas for different scanning technologies.
Awesome. Thank you. Next slide. So project responsibilities on the agency side, we will do the integration. Each agency will have their own scanning cadence, remediation, and the Department of Homeland Security will introduce the vendor to the agencies that want to participate in this program. Shared responsibility, so training the vendor, Varicode will supply the resources. State agencies must participate. We'll work on the reporting needs together. Documentation, where the vendor supplies the documentation, our agencies must read and engage on those documentation. We'll work together on project planning and the reporting needs. On the vendor, Varicode side, they will help with the onboarding training for the agencies. They'll generate the reports, help with program management, provide some consulting services, technical resources, and support the platform overall. Next slide. Project timeline. So if this project gets approved, we'll schedule a kickoff call for next week. We work with the Varicode team to create that outcome success plan, basically our goals. We'll outreach to all the state agencies to identify who wants to participate in this service. We do have five that will be participating, who are part of the committee that evaluated this solution. We will review and prioritize the applications, create the rollout plan, and then from June till October, we'll work with each agency to onboard them, which includes the platform setup, admin setup, and then training. Next slide. So project costs, so for development this year, fiscal year 23, to stand this up, it's $1.7 million. And then for future fiscal years, which will be operational costs, $1.7 million for each fiscal year. So totaling $8.7 million for 5 years. Next slide. The financial impact, we actually have a budget of $2 million, but the base budget available for this project is $1.7 million. The base budget to be requested for future fiscal years is $2 million. So for the total development project funding, for fiscal year 23 is 1.7. For ongoing operational costs for future fiscal years, the current 3-year operational cost is 5.2 million with a proposal of 6 million. So we will be requesting 6 million over 3 years. Next slide. So what success looks like. So within 6 months of procuring the application, we want 50% of the participating agencies, so people who sign up for the service, to at least to have a minimum of one application scanned, one URL scanned, and one developer participating in the e-learning or lab platform. Within 1 year, 100% of those participating in this solution will have at least one application scanned, one URL scanned, and at least one developer using the e-learning and lab platform. Next slide. And with that, we will open up to questions.
All right, thanks, Nan. I'll turn it over to the team. So we'll start with Mr. Kirkland.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A question for the team. The definition of success doesn't look like done. When is done? When is everybody using it?
We want everyone using it within 12 months of procuring the project. So it'll take some time to onboard. We can't really tell everyone to mandate them to scan the application URL, but we'll work to have them utilizing the platform within 12 months of procuring the solution.
Is there a plan on how to ensure that you're actually getting your money's worth? Because basically the way I read it, one user, one app, scan, you could be paying $1.7 million and not really having anybody use it on any of the systems. Like, is there a thought around how do we ensure that all developers are using it, all URLs scan, any of that kind of thing?
Yeah, we'll work with the Varicode team. Part of the onboarding process for each of the state agencies is to identify what their program goals are. And so we'll work with each agency to identify how many applications they want scanned, how many URLs they want scanned, how many developers that want to participate in the e-learning. And so this was a ballpark of what we wanted to do, but we'll definitely work with each agency to make sure that their developers are utilizing the platform.
And if I can jump in, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kirkland, I'll say our ultimate goal is every state agency participating in using this platform. But as our enterprise services are opt-in, they are not mandated. We have little authority to do so. However, we feel like being able to sweeten the pot here and say this helps you to meet your compliance requirements to the policies that you have to adhere to. This solves gaps that are currently not being solved for by enterprise solutions. And frankly, most state agencies do not have a solution for this problem as well. It's a pretty compelling argument to be able to get everyone to participate. It's just a matter of how much time and how much effort it's going to take and then whether they opt in to do so.
Got it. So you're providing a central enterprise platform that they can all come to. If you're building the field, letting them come to you. The trick is they have some compliance obligations and they need to solve them, and you're giving them the tool set. Is that the way to translate what you just said?
That's correct, Mr. Kirkland. And I would say that that's sort of our ongoing shtick here for our division and our department, is we provide enterprise solutions at no cost to the state agencies and allow them to opt in to take advantage of them to help solve cybersecurity goals that are both policy mandated by us and our department, as well as security best practices across the state.
Okay. And if I can ask a follow-on question, how was this platform picked versus, you know, other competitors in the space?
Bob, if you can go to the last slide, please. In the appendix, slide 13. So SBAC approved standing up the Application Security Product Evaluation Committee. This committee was made up of five state agencies or representatives from five state agencies, including Health Services, Revenue, Economic Security, Medical Board, State Retirement, and a task order was sent out to, a task order was sent out to all vendors on a statewide contracts to bring their manufacturers to demo. Each vendor were required to complete a requirements document, budgetary quote, and provide a statement of work. The demos were conducted. Selection was based on the submitted documentation, the demo, and then Varicode will be purchased via an existing state contract. Specifically, when we did the scoring, was based on technical requirements, functionality, ease of use, cost, and overall impression.
Is that through a formal RFP?
It wasn't a formal RFP. It was a task order because we are purchasing off of an existing state contract.
Yeah.
Got it. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Mr. Kirkland. I'm going to pull up who was actually next. Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to follow up with Mr. Kirkland on the RFP. What state agency is currently using the product today?
It wasn't an RFP, it was a task order.
I got that, but in order to be on a state contract, I'm assuming that maybe an agency has already purchased it. That's why they're on the contract.
Oh, actually, Eddie, the answer to that question is, as with a lot of software products, this product and I think everything else that was also being evaluated were already available through some of the cooperative contracts the state participates in, which are NASPO, both for software value-added resellers, and then there's also a NASPO cloud services contract under which some items are procured. So in this case, the task order is, I'll say, follows this, you know, not exactly the same as an RFP process, but a similar process. To issue a task order, allow vendors to evaluate, respond, and as you heard, the team applied a scoring methodology to that. So a full competition had already been satisfied through the state opting into those contracts.
Okay. My next question on this bill 2862 that you're referring to, is there a timeline or time frame where the state needs to be in compliance with this? Is it a year out, 2 years out?
Hi, Mr. Cook, this is Mr. Murray. I'll answer that. So this was the general appropriations bill from last year, appropriating money in FY23. There was no specific timeline other than this money needs to be spent within fiscal year.
Got it. Thank you. My next question, in defining scanning of applications, I'm curious, what type of applications are you thinking of? Homegrown applications? Do that include things like scripts or PowerShell? I mean, how low level are we getting as it relates to what we're trying to meet here?
I'll go ahead and speak to that. So yes, essentially everything, but I'd like to turn it over to our Veracode team to talk a little bit more in depth about what exactly their platform can scan and provide.
I can answer that one, Mr. Cook. Hi, everyone. Max Hoft here from Veracode. So for applications, it's whatever meets a business need. We can scan PowerShell scripts if you want to. We can do homegrown apps, COTS applications, anything that's going to be essentially a bundle of code we can scan or has a URL.
And I'll for clarification, because this is a question I asked in the process, Eddie, was if we have an engagement with, let's say, a third party integrator who's writing code for us, yep. You know, can we leverage this in the process? And I think, you know, obviously there's some things to work through with that integrator, but the answer is yes.
Yes, you are correct, Mr. Sloan.
And is there, and JR, maybe you can answer this one. So does that mean every net new application that's developed by some state agency has to go through possible, we'll call it a committee that scans using this tool before it gets released?
So I'm going to say if they were to comply with, I think, the policy, Mr. Murray, please comment. I think that would be a practice that each agency would take on.
Okay.
In order to ensure the security of their applications, it is their responsibility individually to ensure that they are following secure coding practices today. And this now puts a tool set in their hand that helps to automate and, I think, facilitate that process for them.
Okay, thank you.
And Mr. Chairman, I'll just comment that that's exactly correct. So as mentioned as part of the presentation, we have a policy for system security acquisition and development that requires secure coding development best practices to be implemented for code to be scanned prior to being implemented into development, production, and post-production, and to ensure that vulnerabilities are addressed in a timely fashion. I'll say we don't have a good visibility on whether that's happening in state agencies that are doing their own in-house development now, which is part of the main benefits of utilizing this platform, is we can have that centralized view of what that looks like across the state. And again, allowing them to have a way to meet their compliance requirements with those policies.
Okay, next, Ms. Pereira.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question, who is responsible for remediating the flaws that are found after the coding, and do agencies have the resources to address those issues?
So the state agencies will be responsible for remediating with the assistance of Veracode. And what was your second question? Sorry.
So my understanding from the presentation was Veracode provides some like more training and the videos and the hands-on, but it's the responsibility agencies to fix the code, or their developers if it's they have a vendor doing their system.
That's correct. I know Mr. Murray has his hand up, so I'll let him speak.
Yeah, thank you, Nan. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Pereira, that's exactly correct. So agencies would be required to mitigate any vulnerabilities that were found. And frankly, they have that requirement now. So if they don't have the resources to accomplish this, this is helping to highlight some of those problems and hopefully get them some additional assistance on providing those mitigations to those flaws that are identified.
I have a second question related to the budget, and it might be helpful to go back to the budget slide. But you mentioned, so this was a 2023 appropriation for $2 million, or maybe the next one back that showed the five-year plan. But you didn't get any money in 24. So the money you got in 23 will lapse. There's no money in 24, and you're hoping to get more money in the future years through a budget request. Can you fill me in on the 24 gap, budget gap?
Yeah, so I'll speak to that a little bit, Ms. Pereira, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The short version here is the licenses that we'll be purchasing this year with these funds will extend through the end of fiscal year 24. So we didn't ask for additional funds since we're buying so late in the year of fiscal year 23. Those licenses will be good until all the way through June 2024. And we do plan to submit a financial budget request for FY 25 to continue providing this service.
Right. And to a question that was asked, it's been on a question that was asked earlier, was the adoption rate and the success. Is there any plans to report on the adoption rate? And is this a useful product that we're finding? Since you don't have the budget yet, is there any way to get that information as you're coming up asking for your budget request?
Yeah, I mean, that's a tough conversation to have, right? We don't have a product. We can't necessarily tell what adoption rate's going to look like yet. We do, as Nan mentioned, we do have several agencies that have reached out and said that they want to participate in this program, that they do have in-house development needs where they would like to be able to scan their code for flaws and provide additional training for their developers. That being said, we do have pretty significant adoption of all of the other enterprise security services that we are providing, upwards of probably 80 to 90% for most of them. So if we're following a trend of the other services that our department provides for state agencies, we'd like to see that trend continue.
Thank you.
And Ms. Pereira, I'll jump in on that as well. So my own thoughts on your questions, which I think are great questions. Yes, I think some more robust, we'll say adoption and or success, value to the agency criteria should be provided as part of any budget request. But I will also tell you that from the SPAC committee, which is comprised of multiple agencies, they provide feedback on the expenditures of all of the monies that have been appropriated to the Enterprise Security Fund. And it is there, I mean, I think they're doing a good job acting as stewards to tell us the value of where that money is going. And I expect them to weigh in on, we'll say this is gonna provide an opportunity for them to see the value of this in their overall processes. And I think provide then the context to be able to say, is there a bigger, more pressing problem that they see that should be solved if monies are available, or is this the most valuable thing that we can continue doing? Mr. Yannick.
Thank you. We can leave this slide right where it is because the nature of my question as well. I'm imagining that in the use case, we've got a whole bunch of legacy code that we want to make sure goes through a health check, and that basically this is what we're producing here. I'm wondering kind of the logic for why the multi-year licensing agreement is essentially a steady state if, in fact, over the first whatever period of time, we take the legacy, the basically deferred reviews, and get them through a health check. You know, in the general development of CI/CD in the cloud, security is actually part of the pipeline. So products being created now and forward, presumably, wouldn't generally have to go through an additional health check unless there was something specifically required, because it would actually be built right into the CI/CD pipeline. So it really is a question about logic of having $2 million a year been committed to in the out years.
Go ahead, Mr. Murray.
I'll just say that's an interesting presumption to make, Mr. Gonick, that we have well-developed CI/CD pipelines that have security built into them. I don't know that that's necessarily true. There's a lot of in-house developed applications that are not in a mature CI/CD capability or being developed natively for cloud services. So I think this is something we're going to continue to need to see. The other side of that is this, as mentioned, does provide additional support for scanning COT solutions, for scanning URL applications, for scanning containers and other technology that would be part of that more mature CI/CD pipeline. And again, I'll turn it over to Veracode to add some additional context and details there if they'd like to. But that $2 million provides licensing and capabilities to continue using the platform. It's not just a one and done assessment and then we have to figure out what to do next. This will be continuous use of that platform, which would likely be something for the foreseeable future.
Okay, but I'll ask before someone from Veracode steps in to put a finer point on the question I think both Mr. Gonick and Ryan are asking, or at least I think might be a finer point. As you answer or respond to the question, can you talk about how Veracode as a product integrates with and becomes part of that CI/CD pipeline?
So I'll speak to our integrations, and then I'll let Jeff step in here to talk a little bit about the licensing. But for integrations, the software development lifecycle, we can meet any agency or department where they're at. So if we have a very robust cycle, which we really hope to see, we can put in as commit checks. We can also put in as post-build steps. We can also put as release checks as well. For departments that aren't that far along, maybe we just have a check where we're getting maybe, for example, like some COT software maybe once a year that we want to check from that vendor before sending that live. We can also just take that bundle of code then. We can also just check within release states of just like an old waterfall type methodology too. So Veracode's been around since before a lot of these more agile and DevOps types, I would say software development styles have been created. So we've been able to create integrations and be able to help either departments or companies meet them, essentially wherever their development style is at.
Did that answer your question, Lev?
Yeah, I'll have some comments after regarding that assumption, but I don't have any more questions per se.
Very good. Thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, I'll ask Lev before I go to ask for a question. Do you want to make some general comments before we move toward our conditions before we vote?
Yeah, thanks. I would just simply say that it's an opportunity here that we're being asked to support of about a $10 million, or let's call it $8.7 million investment. In which there is it's a great opportunity for the company. I have no doubt about that. It's a hell of an annuity that they have built into this model. And as the state matures its CI/CD cloud environment, I really do hope that you all see that we're basically committing this rather substantial amount of money for what hopefully is a declining need, even if there are these other activities. It's basically a fixed contract, whether we consume the resources or not. And I'm just guessing after the first year and a half or so, there will be so many other ways of making sure that your security is attended to current forward. And as soon as you deal with the backlog or most of the backlog, it's just a hell of a deal for the vendor.
Thank you, Mr. Gonick. Ryan.
I think just an assumption I'm making to make sure it's correct, tied to a bunch of the answers and the questions from Lavin and Rebecca, et cetera. But my assumption based on those answers is that there is the ability to assess usage over time and exit early if you're not seeing the adoption. Because I'm not concerned from my perspective. that you won't need this solution for 5 years. It's more, if you're not getting the adoption, you're wasting your money. So I assume that there is a way to assess that and pivot the money towards something else if it's deemed necessary in the future, which would mitigate some of the concerns I think are being raised. The other secondary piece of this is, I feel like there should be some sort of condition or some sort of a expectation of a review of adoption over time to reassess this, because one app, one user, like, that's not the end state goal. That's worth $1.7 million. But if you do get the adoption, this is a necessary technology in my mind.
Thanks, Brian. Ryan, did you have something you need to respond to that?
I just wanted to add some additional context that this is something we do for all of the enterprise controls, which is providing reporting on adoption and effective use. We provide sort of a red, yellow, green status across all the state agencies and provide reporting up to the governor's office as well as to each individual agency to see what that adoption looks like. So I'd be happy to provide that back to this committee if they wanted to see what that looks like over time. I'll also say that just to make sure there's no confusion, there has not been additional funding committed in years future state. This is only one-time funding for this year, which we plan to request additional funding for FY25. So this is not a multi-year agreement. There has been no additional funds committed. This is just the first year that this will be purchased. We'll be requesting additional funds, assuming that we have good adoption across future state. Just wanted to make sure that that was clear.
Thank you, Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Bruner.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, members of the committee. Can I just state that this is a sorely needed product at the moment, but I do also understand Mr. Gronick's cynicism, because we have seen statewide Oracle, statewide Adobe, et cetera, and it always does start out great and you're going to build it and they're going to come, and for some reason they never quite make their way all the way into it. But I from my perspective, I think the lack of committed funds over the 5 years with a relook for the FY25 budget that Ms. Pereira has posited, I think is sufficient control to put on this at the moment. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bruner. Rebecca, you good? Okay. All right, I will turn it back over to asset staff to walk us forward in our voting process.
Mr. Mussey, you're muted.
Sorry about that. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, asset is recommending that this pitch be approved with the conditions as presented.
Okay, committee members, with the clarifications provided but the additional discussion, any questions or additional discussion about conditions?
At least in the last couple of comments, I'm fine without additional conditions.
Okay. All right, with that, then I will put forth the question. Do we have a motion to move forward?
Mr. Chairman, I'll move approval with the conditions as shown.
Thank you, Mr. Brenner. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Kirkland. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I'm abstaining.
This is Ryan. I'm also abstaining from my previous recusal.
All right, noted. Okay, with that, Chuck, can you confirm we still comprised a quorum and we had a majority vote on that?
So with Mr. Kirkland's abstention, we still have four ayes.
Mr. Gonick.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gonick. Let me fix that. Mr. Gonick abstaining, we still have four ayes, zero nays, one abstention, and one recusal. So you still have a passing vote.
All right, thank you. All right, thank you, committee, for a very healthy discussion on that. Brian, I think we could talk about how we potentially come back in FY25 to talk about the results and where we are from a funding perspective. So, all right, thank you. We have approval for that, and we will step forward to our next item up for vote, which is the Department of Administration bringing forward the State Parks Broadband Project. And I'm gonna, knowing that we are at 1:45, I know we potentially are gonna lose Mr. Kirkland's ability to interact with us shortly after 2 p.m. So let's try and be crisp. And Chuck, I'll turn it back to you. You have your hand up.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, just for the record, since this is a recording, we need to acknowledge that Mr. Murray has returned to acting as a committee member.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Administration, as well as members from the Arizona State Parks and Trails. The teams will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of their project. Mr. Murray?
Just one quick comment slash question, that the Department of Homeland Security logo, agency, vision, and mission are on this slide as well. Just want to make sure that this is known. It is not a Department of Homeland Security project.
You're recusing the logo, Mr. Murray?
Yes, yes, Mr. Bruner, I am.
Ah, the evils of copy paste.
That's right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, gentlemen.
Noted. Thank you.
Thank you. As I was saying, I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Administration, as well as members of the Arizona Parks and Trails. Teams themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of their project. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the Arizona Department of Administration is requesting approval for the State Parks and Trails Broadband Project that will leverage new infrastructure connections and place additional fiber vaults in key areas to provide access to fiber optic cable for splicing and connections. These new routes provide provide dedicated state network for park staff and public Wi-Fi campus for visitors and campers who stay on the site. This approach will also enable state facilities to leverage infrastructure connections from the surrounding unserved and underserved areas. At this time, I'll turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed project and answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Stephen Jenkins. I'm the Director of Network Operations here at ADOA. I also have joining with me is Linda Caldwell, Bradley McNeil, and Ben Sulzer from State Parks and Trails. For you is the item sponsors from Suzanne, and then Linda Cole will be our business owner support. I'm a technical lead, and we also have our project manager from ADOA for Guna Gurry. Please move to the next slide. Thank you. So our project introduction is supporting the state parks, both for a state network as well as public Wi-Fi. Many of the state parks are in rural areas that do not receive any type of connectivity from cellular support. So there are many events, even like safety events, that have occurred with requiring help, including even just the enjoyment of the parks for camping, hiking, fishing, boating, etc. Our proposed project will work through providing a Wi-Fi campus for the public, for the visitors, both in camping areas as well as day areas and other areas that are selected and approved by the State Parks Board. Our connections will support up to 27 state parks in our project. And our approach will help support state facilities as well as other anchor institutions that may be in those unserved or underserved communities as the carriers build out their infrastructure to those state parks. We'll be able to support potential medical centers, schools, other state agencies, and in the community itself as the carriers build out into those locations. Internet access is important, as again, allows visitors to help research and plan their visits, download the trails, communicate with their family, take and share pictures. As many people have also still remote their is a stay of available to 14 days at a park. So we're able to help support the workforce while they're enjoying the parks itself and all the amenities. Next slide, please. The project will authorize the use of the funds from the American Rescue Plan Act. At this time, we have $20,600,000 allocated from the ARPA funds, of which $600,000 will be used towards administrative costs, the $20,000 going towards the connectivity, broadband, and build out of those parks. The project will focus on parks with the state facilities in uncertain underserved areas. We're collaborating with the Arizona Corporation Commission to help vet those different areas and locations. In each park, the project itself will operate independent, and they're not independent of each other. Each one will be its own build out, have its own milestones. However, ADOA has elected to include all these parks into a single pitch project with different rollouts. The prioritization of these parks will be based upon emergency service requirements, vegetation, overnight accommodations, etc. Again, there's up to 27 parks that we're going to be working with four different milestone phases for each park. The broadband, which is the fiber connection to the park itself, the conduit communication between the DMARC and the state park facilities. Third milestone is the park staff build out, if looking to have any type of state network. And then finally, the last milestone is the public Wi-Fi build out for those areas that support overnight camping, day use areas, et cetera. For our first cycle, we're going to include is three parks, and this pitch and this project presentation is based upon these three parks, help give us milestones, security risks, and we plan on coming back to ITAC with the remaining 24 parks with a change request. That's also going to include some IV&V information. Again, as this total project is $20 million. So the three parks that we're going forth with is Dead Horse Ranch, Patagonia Lake, and Lost Dutchman. We will be supporting the different contracts from the carriers using a state broadband carrier that has 11 carriers already on contract, as well as the conduit and cabling contract. And there's also the network services and ASNET 3 contract for Wi-Fi support. If any of these parks come back with no bids through these parks because of the areas or no accessibility, at that time we'll be able to go off contract and we will involve procurement. Next slide, please. For our responsibilities, we got Arizona Park Administration with tracking the projects, milestones, and budget, procurement, reporting, communications, IV&V, state parks and trails. We'll be working through the Parks Board with approval, operations, tribal approvals, construction, Bureau of Land approvals, staff training. We have a multitude of vendors supporting the broadband to the state parks, the DMARCs build out, equipment, Wi-Fi support, as well as just the ongoing support once the park is live and operational. Next slide, please. For our project timeline, we've been working the several months with all the data requirements, doing the RFI and task orders to get a ballpark for the carrier builds, cost out, Wi-Fi implementations, working through our first cycle of 6 months to get the network connectivity connections in place, and the Wi-Fi is built out to help with the planning and budgeting for us to come back with for our remaining parks at our next ITAC meeting. Next slide, please. So this is the project cost for cycle one for Dead Horse Ranch, Patagonia, and Lost Dutchman. The build-out cost themselves is $2.1 million. That includes a three-year contract on the carrier circuits, includes all the build-out of the infrastructure, and including the Wi-Fi build-out and support of the hardware and network equipment. We'll be utilizing SD-WAN to separate and segment the state network from the public, keeping state network secure, including even a PCI secure network for any credit card transactions supported on the state network. There'll also be support and security testing on the public just to, again, help verify that the networks are truly separate and the state network is safe and secure. Next slide, please. And the estimate cost from the RFIs we've gotten in and estimating the averages, looking to cover all 27 state parks, fulfilling the $20 million obligation for our build out with a operation cost of $646,000 over the course of the term. Again, these are estimated depending upon how much state network is required at each park and build out for support. Next slide, please. Welcome to your financial impact. So today, for the first 3 years, the current operations for the ASNET state network today is $216,000. There'll be a necessary $40,000 needed for the following of the 3 years to help support any on-site state network that will be attainable at the parks that go live. Next slide, please. So successes, we are shooting to hit 75% of the 25-7 parks that are identified. We'll also be doing, the parks will be doing customer service engagements for visitors, help support any of the results that we're seeing from the success of this project, as well as we're working through the entities the surrounding unserved areas. We'll be working in depth with the carriers to help support the actual build out pathways to include additional handholds or even network segments to help support state agencies, again, or communities and build and other public entities. Next slide, please. Our stakeholder communication plans. Again, we currently have biweekly meetings, monthly meetings, cadences, working with different parks and different agencies and support boards, presenting with the governor's office as well as the state park board for approvals based upon the different needs with permits and tribal land. Next slide, please. So there's a lot more data in the slides. I just want to try to keep things tight. So by all means, if there's any questions anybody has, please let me know.
I'm going to let Chuck go first because I wanted him to provide, I asked him to provide some context for us on this proposal, but then we'll get into the more detailed questions.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Just for the record, Chuck Brown, Deputy CIO over at ADOA. A little context I want to provide is first is what are you being asked to approve here? You're being asked to approve the first three projects that have been listed throughout the slides. So that's the $2.1 million development costs that you saw on the financial slides. While there are certainly a lot of parks within the overall initiative that's envisioned here, right, those would come to you at a later time through a change request on the overall PIDGE. Part of what we looked at here is with the involved stakeholders, the scale of what we're attempting to do. These are individual parks, which could be seen as individual projects and dealt with that way. But that comes with an extreme administrative burden of, you know, 20 some individual PIDGEs. So we took that into consideration. Also, we looked at how do we create transparency and collective communication across all these initiatives, learning across each part of the initiative. And that's when we came up with a program approach of doing one PIDGE that allowed us to impact that administrative burden and hopefully reduce it, but also create the transparency and the collective information sharing we wanted. But it also gave us reasoning to eventually bring in IBNV services, which is another level of consulting that can benefit the state when we're looking at not just benefiting the park specifically, we're also looking at benefiting areas of the state that'll be along the pathways created as Mr. Jenkins laid out. So that's a little bit behind why we're approaching this from a singular PIDGE instead of 24 to 27 individual PIDGEs, why you're looking at three to start out with as we build forward. And also make it clear you're being asked today to approve the initial three projects at the $2.1 million in change in development, and that you'll be seeing a change request in the near future to bring in the other cycles as appropriate. You'll also be seeing addition of IBNV into this project for the benefits that come along with that. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman, and see if there's any questions directly for oversight.
All right, thank you, Chuck. We'll go ahead and go to you since you have your hand up.
Thanks. Just want to say first how supportive I am of this particular initiative. For those who know me, probably won't come as much of a surprise. I do, however, want to ask some questions about the assumptions. And it starts with how many route miles do we actually think of new construction or actually part of the RFI that informs the budget? And related to it, again, not the most traditional way of presenting these kinds of opportunities, but do we have some insight as to what part of the investment is non-recurring versus what part? I think we do know something about the MRC, but do we actually know what the NRC part of the budget model looks like? So the first question is, how many miles do we estimate to connect this first phase of parks? And then secondly, how much of the model is based on NRC versus MRC?
Thank you very much, Chairman and members of the committee. Yes, we have approximately 24 of the 27 parks. We've received the initial build-out costs for the NRC-MRC costs. We are also working with the carriers to help lump everything into an upfront one-time cost to help with the overall project that can be supported by the ARPA funds to eliminate more of the MRC support coming from the carriers. We've got support on 18 of the 27 parks already in those proposals. As far as the first three, we have anywhere between 3/4 of a mile up to 2 miles of build out for these parks for the fiber highway. Dead horse specifically with the proposal from Lumen, they actually expedited some of their build out in Cottonwood to be able to provide a better upfront NRC cost to help win the bid for Dead Horse. So they helped, enhance some of their construction projects in Cottonwood to bring that tie-in closer to Dead Horse Ranch, again, to be able to help win this bid. With that build-out, we're also seeing advancements for a access, ADOT, and a child safety location in Cottonwood will be able to take advantage of this fiber build-out once this project's complete.
So the total number of, I'm sorry, just quick follow-up. For the first phase, the total number of miles under contract informing the $18 million of NRC is?
Approximately 4 additional miles from the build out borders to where those state parks are at.
So the total, again, just to be clear, the total construction for our carriers in total is 4 miles, or is there cost involved additional middle mile or long haul or other investments that they need to make in order to connect these last 4 miles?
Yes, there is investment they need to make. There is the build out costs that are part of the NRCs, which we do have the proposals on.
Okay.
And some of them are also doing the build out that they may have had planned for later in this year. They are bringing construction up sooner to help support these projects to be able to win these bids and be the carrier of choice.
Thank you.
And then, all right, other questions? Okay, if there are no further questions, I'll turn it back to you, Mr. Messi.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Asset is recommending that the PIDG be approved with the conditions as presented.
Okay, I think we have a more or less standard, I will say the third condition. Do we need a discussion on that or any questions on that? If there are no questions on the conditions, I'll take the motion with regard to the project.
This is Ryan. I'll go ahead and motion.
Thank you, Mr. Murray. Do we have a second?
This is Jiggy. I'll second.
Thank you, Jiggy. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. That's a unanimous vote. Thank you very much. and good luck with the project to Steve and Parks Department. Okay, last voting item we're up on now is a change request from Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System.
Karen, you're on mute.
I knew I would do that. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Karen Whiteford, and I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System, also known as ACCESS, who will introduce themselves after a brief overview of the project. The HCA Plus REST JSON XML Services Phased Approach PIDGE was approved by ACCESS on June 16, 2022. The goal of this project is to complete updates required by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service, also known as CMS, Federal Data Service Hubs. States that fail to update the matching architecture changes will lose hub connectivity and the verifications they provide in March of 2024. This project consists of seven phases, with the originally expected total project budget of under $800,000. As CMS released details of each phase, ACCESS submitted change requests to accurately reflect the scope, timing, and financials of the project. This change request addresses additional scope added to phase seven of the project by CMS in February of 2023. The Arizona Healthcare Cost Containment System is requesting an extension to the end date of this project from December 15, 2023 to January 31, 2024. And a project budget increase of $415,500. At this time, I'll turn this over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions you may have.
Chuck, great. Next time, please. Chuck, do you need to cover something before we get started?
Yeah, I apologize for the interruption, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and members of the team at ACCESS, but since we're a recording, type of minutes, I need to put on the record that Mr. Kirkland left the meeting at 2:03. It's the only way we have to put it on the record, so I apologize for the interruption.
Thanks, Chuck. Back to you, Dan.
Great, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name's Dan Lippert. I'm the Assistant Director for the Information Services Division here at ACCESS. I will go ahead and introduce the rest of the team. Patty Dennis is the Assistant Director of our Division of Member and Provider Services. They're the primary consumer of the services that we're discussing today. Marsha Wilmot is the Deputy Assistant Director for the Division of Member and Provider Services. Anthony Flott is our Chief Technology Officer. And Joshua Worley is our Senior Finance Administrator for the Division of Business. So I will turn it over to Anthony to begin discussions on the project.
Thank you, Dan, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. The project in scope here is that CMS and our connection to the federal hub mandated as spelled out in March of 24, they will no longer be using SOAP XML type connections for these API calls and web calls. And so that needs to go to a JSON of which we're using a web token for the security on that JSON call. So a REST JSON call, sorry. And so again, the problem statement is listed here is we need to do the conversion for all of our connections from that SOAP XML to the REST JSON with a Java web token for the authentication on that. The benefit of this system change is that it would allow us to maintain our federal hub connections, of which all of our eligibility and many other federal related items that we do for verification are done through. Next slide, please. Here's what the proposed system would look like to as we go through this. So currently you can see with the data flow here, when we receive a request, it batches up and it sends a request over to the federal hub via our HEA Plus interface. That interface is what connects to the federal hub API as listed there in the dark blue. The various data flows here are the security checks between that JSON or that JWT JSON web token, which is the securing of that API call. As that passes back and forth, once the connection's authenticated, we then are able to download the data we need to complete the task we have in the HEA Plus system. And I will, next slide, I will turn it over to Marshall, who will go over more background.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. This slide really just kind of goes over everything that we've already heard. So let's go on to the next slide and we'll talk about the funding here. So we had anticipated, when we started this project, we had predicted it would cost us about $100,000 per phase. We knew the requirements of phase one and two. Each of them came in at around $100,000 from our vendor. So we felt confident that we were going to just go through with $100,000 per phase. But then phase three came in and was almost twice as much as the first two phases. So we submitted an amendment to our PIDG to raise the total cost for fiscal year 23 to $371,000. Phases four, five, and six came in at around $100,000 apiece. We submitted our second amendment, raising the fiscal year 23 cost to $468,000, and then fiscal year 24 added that of $289,000. But then the CMS released the business service descriptions for the final two services, and that account transfer service had a complete schema change overhaul that touched every element of the account transfer service. So the account transfer service is how access then customers who have been determined to be over the income limit to the federal health insurance marketplace, and to allow those people to enroll in insurance and to apply for the health insurance affordability programs, like the advanced premium tax credit. It's also how the FFM sends referrals back to access of people that have applied for that program and appear to be eligible for Medicaid. So they send those customers, those Arizonans, information back to access that way. Due to those overall changes, CMS also required more extensive testing in phase and the trusted data source UAT testing cycles. Let's go to the next slide. So as you've heard, we are asking to extend our timeline. We were planning on having this all completed by the middle of December of this year, and now we're going to be at the end of January next year. That is all based on the increased scope of the account transfer system or project that we have, and it increased our cost from $757,000 to $1.1 million. That's a $415,000 difference. Can we go to the next slide? All right, this is what our timeline looked like before. If you go to the next slide, there's the three dates that changed there, the release dates for the three phase seven SRs or the two phase seven SRs. If you go to the next slide, Karen created this beautiful display for you. And so there you see in the orange, that's what has changed, just the implementation of that one date. So we're going to go to the next slide. This is our testing slide. So it just talks about phase testing and trusted data source. So phase testing is UAT and trusted data source is regression testing. So it was very complicated and we had to coordinate with CMS on all that. Next slide. Handing it over to Joshua.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Marshall went over the costs and what caused the increase in the project, but just some basic financials. So far, project spend has been $468,000 through March 2023. We have approved spending of $289,000 through phase six. And our now new total project projected spending is $1.2 million. And that represents an increase of $415,500. Next slide. The costs for the project are split between SNAP, TANF, and Medicaid based on the beneficiaries of each phase. And the Medicaid costs are shared between the federal government and the state government. So in total, the federal government is going to pay for $911,000 of the total project, with state Medicaid at $165,000, SNAP at $62,000, and TANF at $34,000. Next slide. And now we have an opportunity, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for any questions you may have.
All right. I'll go ahead and open it up. Any questions from the committee? Or is it all crystal clear? Okay, Chuck.
Mr. Chairman, for the benefit of the committee, I just want to point out the overall program of HEA Plus was submitted an informational update that was part of your meeting material. It's not something we're going to verbally go over there, but if you're curious about where the overall program stands, how many projects, how much spend, how are they doing health-wise, that informational update is in the reading material the committee was provided.
All right, thanks, Chuck. Mr. Bruner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize, my camera is rebelling against Google, but I'm still here. I just want to clarify my understanding that this project started out below the $1 million line, and then because of the amendments, it crossed the $1 million line. That's why we're seeing it now. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mr. Bruner, that is correct. It was something that CMS released part of the requirements, their attempt at an agile deployment. And so we did not have the full scope when we first started this project of what was going to transpire. Based on initial estimates, we felt that we would be, the whole project would be under $1 million, although the complexity increased when we got to the last phase.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Lippert. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, any other questions from the committee? If not, I'll turn it back over to you, Karen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. ASSET is recommending that the change request be approved with the original conditions as presented.
Okay, if there's no questions or discussion of the conditions, I will take a motion with regard to this change request.
Moved, Lev.
Thank you, Lev. Do we have a second?
This is Stewart. I'll second.
Thank you, Mr. Bruner. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, that's unanimous approval. Thank you to the Access team. That was a very well put together presentation. I think very clear. So good luck and continued execution of the project.
Thanks very much.
I think we are into the informational updates, which are all written, but we will not be reviewing. So that, I think, draws us to the close of our agenda. And our next meeting is scheduled for June 21st. So please look ahead on your calendars as you're planning your summer breaks. Let us know your availability, members, and otherwise we will plan to talk to you then. Thank you very much. Have a good one.
All right, team member.
Sorry about that, Stuart.
Yeah, I got to figure out this camera thing. I don't know what happened there. It was good at the beginning, and then it cut out.
All right, let's go ahead and stop the recording, team members, and